What turns a kind college student into a sadistic prison guard in just days? This question haunts Philip Zimbardo's groundbreaking work on the psychology of evil. In 1971, Zimbardo transformed Stanford University's basement into a mock prison, randomly assigning psychologically healthy students to roles as either guards or prisoners. The planned two-week experiment collapsed after just 6 days when the situation spiraled dangerously out of control. Guards who described themselves as pacifists became increasingly cruel, forcing prisoners to clean toilets with bare hands, standing on their backs during push-ups, and subjecting them to humiliating sexual taunts. Meanwhile, prisoners became passive, depressed, and helpless, with some experiencing complete emotional breakdowns. Most disturbing was how quickly everyone, including Zimbardo himself, became absorbed in their roles. The experiment ended only when an outside observer was horrified by what she witnessed. This wasn't about bad apples with sadistic personalities. The roles had been randomly assigned. The situation itself transformed ordinary people into monsters. Within hours of entering the Stanford experiment, participants weren't just playing parts, they were becoming their roles. Guards quickly developed elaborate control systems and arbitrary rules, requiring prisoners to ask permission for basic needs and creating increasingly degrading punishments. One guard admitted conducting little experiments of verbal abuse, surprised that no one questioned my authority. Prisoners embraced their subordinate identities, addressing guards formally and using ID numbers. When offered parole, some forfeited payment to leave, then allowed themselves to be led back to cells rather than simply quitting. Dehumanization, stripping away others' human qualities, enables decent people to justify cruelty. In the Stanford experiment, this occurred systematically. Prisoners were identified by numbers, wore uniform smocks resembling dresses, had bags placed over their heads, and were referred to collectively. Guards began viewing them as cattle. Bandura's research confirmed this effect. Students administered higher electric shocks to victims described as animals versus nice guys. The power of roles lies in how they simplify social interactions through clear expectations, but this same quality makes them dangerous when divorced from ethical principles. We see this in workplaces where people follow questionable directives because that's my job, in military units where soldiers commit atrocities under orders, and in social groups where peer pressure overrides individual conscience. While we focus on active perpetrators, Zimbardo highlights how passive bystanders enable evil through inaction. In the Stanford experiment, good guards, who never personally abused prisoners, facilitated abuse by failing to intervene. Their silence constituted tacit approval. This pattern repeats throughout history, from Holocaust bystanders claiming ignorance to employees who observe unethical practices yet remain silent. The bystander effect explains this phenomenon. The more witnesses to an emergency, the less likely any individual will act. When responsibility diffuses among many observers, personal obligation diminishes. Princeton Theological Seminary students, preparing sermons about the Good Samaritan, largely ignored a person in distress when they believed they were running late. Institutional structures often discourage intervention. Whistleblowers face retaliation, while organizational loyalty is rewarded. Military and police cultures particularly emphasize not reporting misconduct. Recognizing our vulnerability to bystander apathy is essential for overcoming it, with direct requests significantly increasing intervention by clarifying individual responsibility. 30 years after his experiment, Zimbardo witnessed its dynamics horrifically replicated in the Abu Ghraib prison scandal, where American soldiers forced Iraqi prisoners into humiliating poses while guards smiled for cameras. As an expert witness for Staff Sergeant Ivan Frederick, Zimbardo accessed evidence challenging the official bad apples narrative. Frederick, like most Stanford participants, had no history of sadism or psychological problems. His file showed exemplary service as both a civilian corrections officer and military reservist. Yet, at Abu Ghraib, he participated in shocking abuses. The situational forces exceeded Stanford's. Guards worked 12-hour night shifts 7 days weekly, slept in rodent-infested cells, faced constant mortar attacks, received minimal training, and operated under blurred chains of command. Military intelligence instructed guards to soften up prisoners without specifying legal methods. Both settings featured the same psychological processes: de-individuation through anonymity, dehumanization of prisoners, diffusion of responsibility, and gradual normalization of escalating abuse. Zimbardo's core insight reveals that while individuals make choices, systems create conditions that make certain choices more likely. People bring unique personalities and values to situations, with some resisting situational pressures better than others. However, research consistently shows situational forces typically overwhelm individual differences. At the situational level, multiple mechanisms shape behavior. Authoritative roles provide permission, anonymity reduces accountability, group dynamics create conformity pressure, and rules justify questionable actions. At the systemic level, someone designs these roles, rules, and incentives. In the Stanford experiment, Zimbardo created the system. At Abu Ghraib, military and political leaders established policies enabling abuse. This understanding has practical implications. Individuals need situational awareness, recognizing when they're being influenced by roles or authority figures. Organizations must create accountability at all levels, especially for system designers. The Abu Ghraib scandal punished low-ranking soldiers but brought virtually no consequences for high-ranking officials who created the enabling policies. Despite human vulnerability to situational forces, heroism offers hope as evil's counterpoint. Ordinary people can become perpetrators under certain conditions, but also heroes when circumstances demand moral courage. Heroism includes not just physical risk, but standing against injustice despite personal costs like rejection or career damage. Heroes typically reject the label, insisting they simply did what anyone would do. This banality of heroism parallels Hannah Arendt's banality of evil. Both emerge from ordinary people responding to extraordinary circumstances. The Stanford prison experiment itself ended because of Christina Maslach's heroic confrontation with Zimbardo. "What you are doing to those boys is a terrible thing." The most unsettling revelation is that the capacity for both good and evil exists within each of us. The line between hero and villain shifts with circumstances rather than being fixed in personality. This changes how we view evil, from asking, "What kind of monster would do this?" to, "What kind of situation would make ordinary people do this?" It challenges us to examine the systems we create, recognizing that roles and structures profoundly shape behavior. The Stanford Prison Experiment reveals that evil stems not just from bad individuals, but from toxic situations and system designs that bring out the worst in human nature. This insight gives us both responsibility and power to design systems with proper safeguards and accountability. Heroes emerge unexpectedly. Joe Darby exposed Abu Ghraib abuses despite knowing he'd face retaliation. Helicopter pilot Hugh Thompson intervened at My Lai by positioning his aircraft between American troops and Vietnamese civilians. Zimbardo suggests we can cultivate the heroic imagination by viewing ourselves as heroes in waiting, prepared to act when needed. The same psychological processes operating in extreme situations function in our everyday lives when we dehumanize others, conform despite ethical concerns, or witness injustice silently. Understanding these forces empowers us to resist them. The choice between good and evil isn't made once, but daily, in small decisions that either affirm or deny our shared humanity.